Hey everybody, it's Laura. So I don't know about you, but I've been feeling kind of sluggish lately, and it's made me really want to focus on feeling better. And I realized that feeling better isn't just about hitting the gym or eating perfectly. It's really about finding those little routines that fit seamlessly into your life and give you that extra boost. For me, that's been daily Nutri-Greens. Remember those mornings when grabbing coffee was the only option and a salad by lunchtime felt like a distant dream? For me, daily Nutri-Greens changed that. It's a powder packed with everything good. Essential greens, fruits, prebiotics, and probiotics. All of the ingredients you need to feel your best. But the real win is that it's so easy to integrate into my day. I just put a scoop in water, do a quick blend, and I'm good to go. You can use it in smoothies, water, whatever you like, but it's delicious and convenient, and honestly, that's a win in my book. So check out Daily Nutri-Greens from Equilibria. You can find it at myeq.com.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free to play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexandra Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet.
Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good Together listeners, I know I say this every time, I'm always excited to welcome new guests to the podcast, but today is especially exciting because today we've got Nick Huzar on the podcast. He is the founder of OfferUp, as I'm sure all of us are very familiar with that app and, you know, thinking about the impact it's had on the circular economy, at least in modern times, has been pretty mind-blowing. What we're here to talk about today is, you know, what he's been doing since founding OfferUp, and really, want to get into a new project that he's working on called Stuff TV. I'll let him tell you all about all of the things, but I'm so excited to talk about stuff with you today, Nick. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here and good to talk about stuff, something I think we can all clearly relate to.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wonder if you want to just get us started by just doing a really brief intro of you and sort of what you've been up to.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of do a quick intro on OfferUp, and then I'll dig into stuff a little bit more as well.
Yeah.
You know, I started, you know, OfferUp unintentionally, to be honest. I've done a few companies, and, you know, I was moving on from my previous startup and kind of interviewing for a job. And then my wife told me she was pregnant, and I said, hallelujah, this is awesome. And I go into dad mode and was going to turn this old room we had into my daughter's nursery. And then I just thought about it and like, this is going to take me forever to try to post all these things online. There's got to be a better way. And so I think like any, most entrepreneurs, you're really selfishly kind of solving a problem for yourself first. And that was it for me. So we started writing code on the second generation iPhone. There was no Android phone. So it's gives you an idea kind of where we were. But, you know, I think, you know, my belief back then, and it's still true now, was, you know, if you think about the amount of stuff that's accumulating all around the world, it's really growing in these urban areas. And I just felt like, man, you know, if we could leverage these devices that we now have all in our pockets, we can rethink the entire local buying and selling experience. And if we remove friction, then we can unlock a lot of value. And I think that was always the spirit of why we started OfferUp.
Yeah. And I'm going to just jump in here, listeners, because depending on, you know, how old you are, you may or may not remember times before we all had smartphones. But I think, you know, what the big insight that you just shared that jumped out to me was the fact that you realized that we could be putting these devices to better use, right? Like we could like literally take this new technology that we had and use it to connect with people in slightly different ways. I remember I was around for the launch of the iPad. I actually was working at Apple retail because it was the Great Recession. And I was working Apple retail on the side. And I remember when the iPad came out, I was like, look, I don't really get it. This seems to me like, you know, a big iPhone. And I just remember everybody talking about, no, there's so many different ways we can use these devices, like in the doctor's office, et cetera. So, you know, having that insight, I think, on what you said, a second generation iPhone, like that's pretty mind blowing and like kind of hard to picture nowadays, right?
Yeah. It was, you know, a lot of work. We just believed we were very early, clearly. And luckily we stuck with it long enough and it took off. And then today, you know, OfferUp's half the US is installed OfferUp. We've had 130 million installs. We sell billions of dollars worth of goods every month. And we have like huge percentages of you know, cities using us. Like 30% of all of LA, all the adults in LA use OfferUp every month.
Wow.
So we really become a platform for local. And I think that's a good segue into, you know, why I'm doing stuff. And so, you know, I've had a front row seat for over a decade to local commerce, and I've been seeing kind of the activity and just blown away by how much consumption there is in the US.
Yeah.
And I started thinking a lot about my own existence and thinking, you know, how am I impacting this planet? And I think we all wonder this.
Yeah.
And I thought I could Google this, by the way. And you know, you can measure these things, but it's not really very easy to digest and understand. And so, you know, my approach to this was, it is a complex topic. It's one I know that we all think about, but there's not really good, simple solutions to help us kind of visualize what's happening. And so, you know, what I found was a lot of scientists talking about it, you know, and just not really an engaging way. And so I'm more of a visual learner. And so I felt, you know, why don't I do video podcast? Why don't I interview folks, talk about this topic, but let's also bring some visuals into it. So a good example would be, you know, I laid in a year's worth of my family's trash for Earth Day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was actually a week's worth, but then we photoshopped it times 50.
Well, that's good.
But that's a lot of, but been my approach has been, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I think I'm good at taking complexity and making it simple. And so, you know, that's what we've been doing, and I'm going to do 52 episodes this year.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it's everything from, you know, the gentleman that advised Bill Gates on his nuclear efforts to, you know, recycled underwear. I mean, you name it. I mean, anything around stuff, I'm talking about it, because I do think it's a topic people are interested in. And like I said, I didn't see a lot of resources out there that I thought were, you know, interesting to kind of engage in. So it's kind of a personal mission that I'm on, and then I'm just recording it and sharing it with the masses.
Yeah, no, I love this approach. And I think you're right. There's so much opportunity to further discuss this problem in different ways. I think We all are familiar with the ubiquitous carbon footprint calculator. There's a few sort of, I guess, like eco tropes, if you will, that people are familiar with. But at the same time, I don't think we are talking enough about consumption and doing it in a more responsible and conscious way. I mean, that's the whole reason we founded this podcast and Brightly. I mean, it becomes so much more of an issue when you actually start to think about the impact that you're having on a personal level. Listeners, you know, we like to throw in statistics just to help, ground you in what we're talking about. But, in 2022, so last year, U.S. consumers spent $17.4 trillion on goods and services. And that spend has almost doubled in 17 years. So we are accumulating more things. The EPA, we've talked about this statistic before, but I love it because it's just staggering, in my opinion. Like the EPA says that the average American produces 4.5 pounds of trash every single day. And that's crazy. I mean, like, I'm trying to think, like, Nick, what's something that weighs like 5 pounds that people, is it like, I'm like, how much is like a sack of flour weigh? I'm trying to remember.
Maybe one of those. Even the more mind-blowing stat is the average American will produce 128,000 pounds in a lifetime.
Oh my God.
That's just one person. So do the math times the number of Americans. And you think about consumption and what happens to everything. Where does it all go?
Yep.
Right. So I've been interviewing and talking to a lot of recycling companies and waste management companies, just more or less out of curiosity of, there's still value in this waste stream. And I think the hard part is, how do you extract, how do you reuse these things? And so I think that, you're seeing a lot more innovation in this space than we've ever had, which is good, but it is a massive problem.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about that, because I feel like people who want to still have a lot of stuff oftentimes rely on this sort of happy path that their goods go through when they leave their house, right? So recycling or Goodwill or, a bunch of, various ways to get rid of your things. But ultimately, I'm a big believer that, number one, you should try and get somebody else to reuse it directly, right? Like using an OfferUp or Buy Nothing or something like that, because that's like a direct impact. But then when we think about recycling, donation, et cetera, like stuff really doesn't end up oftentimes where we think it does. We had a great podcast with a gentleman who came from a family of garbage collectors for for lack of a better word, for many, many years. It was his family business. And they have just been, they focused on textiles, but he talked for a long time about just how it's not ending up where we think it is. So I'm curious to know, like, in some of these conversations you've been having on Stuff TV, like, what are some things that are jumping out to you?
Yeah, I think starting all the way, to your house and as consumers. So let's talk about manufacturing for a minute. So some of the trends, I think the things that are bubbling up require government and require policy. And yes. So if you look at, I think we all go through this, is, you take your trash and you go, where bin does this even go in? It is so complicated. And the little recycled kind of the sign on there, that was never intended to be recycled. Recyclable. Yeah. That came about as just a way to label and describe what the products are made of. And then we, over time, said, okay, these mean certain things. It's extremely complicated. And I think that's where government needs to come in and create more policy. Kind of like a traffic light. Like, we know no matter what city in America you go to, what a red light means. Why aren't our things labeled in a way that really explains that? And so one challenge is manufacturing is typically, done with a large audience or a global audience in mind. But the way we deal with waste is very regionalized, sometimes down to the city level. So where you live versus where I live, chances are they do things differently. And so that creates a macro challenge. It's very different. So I have heard that they are going to start to enforce different types of labeling for manufacturers. And I've also heard they're going to put some of the burden on manufacturers of what happens with their waste. So a good example would be, in the world today, we will produce 500 billion, with a B, plastic water bottles. Coca-Cola is probably a big part of that. So I think if they're manufacturing that many water bottles, then they should have some level of liability to say, okay, how are these disposed? So I think
those
are
all very
good things at a macro level. And then, you know, part of it is just, I think it's challenging to educate consumers on like, oh, you're going to stand there. You need like a PhD to figure out what goes where.
So exactly. You do.
So I think that's part of it is, can we simplify that? Can we put some of the burden on manufacturers? And hopefully over this will take a while. You know, can we do things at that spot where as consumers, we put it in the trash?
Yeah.
Okay? 'Cause then what happens is then waste management and other places inherit that, but we play a vital role in that. So like if we throw a battery, for example, in our trash, that is catastrophic for a lot of waste management companies. It creates fires, explosions, like, you know, so that is bad. You know, how much are we wish cycling? So if we take, you know, plastic and we throw, you know, or we actually take trash and throw it in our recycle bin. Well, now you just tainted the whole bin, right?
And yeah, so exactly.
That is a big challenge, but there are some cool things. You have to look at it step by step and really break it down. So there's companies, for example, that are doing AI recycling robots. In fact, I had a company called Glacier on the Stuff TV podcast recently.
Okay.
And the cool thing about that is they can go super fast and they can learn and they can create data. And you can learn a lot from that. So that is a big challenge in recycling now is you don't have a lot of very, you know, accurate data. And so can we learn from that and understand what are the things that are coming through these plants? Then the other thing some of these companies are doing is they're starting to understand, you know, we have a lot of value here. Why are we just throwing these in landfills? Can we actually do more local recycling? And so, you know, I had a recent company that I had on was Republic Services, and they're a large waste management company. They have about 17,000 trucks. This gives you an idea how big this company is. And they are trying to partner with companies like Tide to say, hey, you keep throwing out these, you know, consumers keep throwing out these, you know, these bins, but we can actually reuse them in this new center they have called a polymer center. And so now you don't have to ship these goods around the world anymore. You can say, oh, I'm just going to get my supply locally. Which is huge. Which is you want to talk about the impacts to the environment? That is a massive, massive change. So, you know, I'm excited by a bunch of these things. There's one more company I'd say that I love to plug is called Ridwell. I don't know.
Yes. I'm familiar with them. Yeah.
That was actually the first episode I ever shot.
Very cool.
And the CEO, they're based out of Seattle. It's awesome because they're filling a gap that waste management companies typically just don't deal with, and so they take a. You know, you name it. They take batteries, they take styrofoam, you know, a lot of the plastic waste they take that you're recycling, you know, some of this plastic can't be recycled.
Yeah.
They use it to make tracks decking, right?
So they do. Very cool. Very cool. I've heard of that company before. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Very cool. Very popular in Seattle. And I think it's just, you know, we need more innovation like that. So
yes, we do.
A lot more nowadays than I used to, but it's great to see.
Yeah. And the other thing that's cool about Ridwell, I'm based in Seattle as well, and people have their little boxes on their front porch, and it's almost like a low-key status symbol, or maybe it's not a status symbol, it's like an eco symbol. And so I love that they have that branding. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting about Ridwell, and is something where as somebody who knew more and more about like TerraCycle and kind of the controversy there, I've always been curious, like, are they actually doing what they say they're doing with the items? And I think Ridwell is an example of a company that is doing that. But, you know, there was quite a scandal, as I'm sure you're familiar with. You know, I want to say it came to light maybe last year, but TerraCycle is a company that partners with many, many large corporations to launch take back or recycling programs for items that don't seem particularly recyclable on the at first blush. But, you know, they're like, hey, send us back I can't even think of a great example now, but they seem very complicated. And as it turned out, there was, you know, a relatively big scandal where, you know, in some instances, not all, like they were doing some legitimate recycling, but there were some instances where, you know, they kind of overpromised to these partner corporations. And when it came time to actually take these, you know, products that had been sent to them and get them recycled, they actually weren't doing it. They were like sitting on the items. I mean, so for me, as somebody who is obviously very into this, information and, you know, it's a big part of my job. I previously don't think I was looking at these programs with maybe enough skepticism. And then when that came out, I was like, oh my God, I should have known. Like this, I mean, who thinks that you can actually recycle a, insert very complicated product here, you know? So curious to know like what you've run into in that space as well.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, the biggest challenge in a lot of waste, just dealing with our waste is the juice worth the squeeze? I mean, are we going to spend the time to extract, you know, and isolate these various things that are in our
That must product. Be a founder thing. I say that all the time and my team always looks at me like, are you serious?
The juice worth the squeeze?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I think it's because some cases you're like, okay, I'm going to extract, polyester out of cotton. So there's an episode I shot on this. We're a really cool company. They spent 10 years building this product that basically does exactly that because, you know, not long ago, 100 years ago, everything was made out of cotton or wool or whatever it was. But now everything's all, you know, woven together. And so now isolating and removing plastics and things that are in our clothing becomes a real big challenge. There's one company that, you know, I had on was, you know, like I said, 10 years in the making to figure out exactly that challenge. Now the key for, I think for a lot of these is, okay, you know, some of these are very small, right? They're proving these in like a lab and now it comes into the supply chain and go, okay, how can you scale this? And is it economical? Because, you know, if it costs more money or it takes, or it's more, you know, or it's, or it takes longer, people are just not going to do it. And so I think that'll be probably, you know, you can look at any industry and decide like, are there ways that we can actually go about doing this that it's, you know, at least neutral? Because I think consumers will, you know, they'll act with their wallet. And if they want a better product, I'm not convinced the masses are willing to spend more for economically friendly product. Like Ridwell is a good example. Like we pay for that. Everyone pays for that. But that's not for everybody. And so, you know, I think that is, that will be the biggest challenge when it comes to sustainability is how do we do it in a way that is economically viable.
Yeah. And you know, I think you're right. There's like a total, I guess like, yeah, sort of magic formula when you're right. Like, does it make sense to actually procure this from a financial perspective? I think it's obviously number one, but I also think too, you know, oftentimes consumers are left having to pick up the burden, like we talked about earlier, whether they're paying for a service like this, or maybe they're paying a little bit extra for a product that's made from recycled materials. So, you know, I do think while the topic, of course, of this podcast is about individual impact, you know, we would certainly be remiss if we didn't. You talked a little bit about at the top of the show about like, policies and governmental, intervention needed. And I think one thing that we can all perhaps take away from this podcast as well is, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that you have to, dedicate a ton of time and research to this. Like, just look and see what's going on at your local level. I think a lot of people forget that some of these more trailblazing type legislation oftentimes starts at the local level, like plastic bag bans, et cetera. So like, maybe just take a look and see what's going on in your local government. And then also just, just feel free to contact your representatives every once in a while and just be like, hey, I am sick of, drinking stuff out of plastic bottles. Like, when are we coming up with, a solution to that, right?
Yeah. And I think more people should do that. Like, if you talk to government, they pay attention to that stuff. And I think most people feel like, oh, I'm just one person. My voice doesn't matter. But they will. They'll listen. If you can reach out to them and do it, you'd be amazed. And so I think more people should do that.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about, about the stuff problem in general, but one thing that we had kind of in our notes to talk about, which I think is interesting and something that we don't usually talk about, is like the negative impacts of actually owning too much stuff. And I think about the visual that you just mentioned of you laying down in a pile of trash, and listeners, of course, will include links to these visuals and things like that in the show notes because we're audio only right now, right? But, other than going into a room and being like, oh my God, I can't handle all this stuff in my house, I'm going to go crazy. Like, what are the other negative impacts of owning too much stuff that you're seeing from where you're looking at things?
Yeah. Well, I think first off, if I think about in my lifetime, the amount of things that are at my fingertips is amazing, right? It's a great time to be alive. I remember I was talking with somebody earlier. I couldn't get pineapple, for example, when I was a kid. And now I can get it any time of year, right? Mm-hmm. Clothing.
Yeah.
I just click on a button and things come to me. It's a great time to be alive. But when you look back at kind of the overall impact of these things, that's when you realize, well, there's a much bigger consequence to ordering that t-shirt. So a good example would be, a lot of times I've seen this online, you know, people are harping on like Leonardo DiCaprio because he's flying a private jet and he's talking about sustainability. If you look at all of transportation, boats, planes, cars, that is nothing compared to what it takes to clothe us. Our clothing industry is a major contributor to carbon emissions. And part of that is, I mean, we'll just look at the cost of a t-shirt. So a t-shirt, just to make a t-shirt is about 30 bathtubs worth of gas, or where's the water to actually make a t-shirt. Well, then it's, okay, I got to heat up the dyes to make this thing. And then I got to stick it on a plane. And then I got to bring it over here. And then what happens when you only wear that for a while? Then what happens to that t-shirt, especially if there's plastic woven into it? So, you know, clothing is a massive one. And the other one, and I think we're guilty of this even in our own household, where, you know, we find a shirt we like online and we're not sure it's going to fit. So what do? We order multiple sizes. And, you know, so we end up, you know, picking that one perhaps, but then we send the other ones back. So think about the process that's happening there. It's not, again, the transportation, packaging. If you think of one of the biggest contributors to carbon emissions, it's plastics in our packaging. I mean, we're doing over 100 billion parcels shipped, you know, a year being shipped. And I forgot exactly the date. I want to say it's the next 5 to 7 years. We'll have close to 250 billion packages shipped every single year. And so that is a massive, massive number. And so I would just encourage people to go look at your closet and go, do you really need 50 t-shirts?
Yeah. No, and it's so true, Nick. And I think, yes, sustainable fashion, I think, was probably my first entry point into the world of thinking about being eco-conscious. I think it's one that, you know, people are trying to tackle in different ways, like at least from like a technology standpoint or even a startup perspective. But I think really before we even get there, we as a society and as individuals need to kind of rethink our relationship with fashion. And I actually, one of the reasons I went on this journey myself was my very first job out of college that was meaningful was I worked at Amazon. I worked at Amazon Fashion. And my whole job there was to sell as many shoes, handbags, and clothing pieces to people as I possibly could. And I got really good at that job. I loved the fact that I was having some success professionally. But I also one day had this realistic epiphany where I was like, wait a second, like I myself am actively contributing to a cycle that is not sustainable. And a lot of it comes down to trends. It comes down to, you know, utilization of materials that aren't going to last a long time. And, you know, of course, sometimes that's done by design, right? Like sometimes companies are like trying to get you to buy more that way, but they're also trying to get you to buy more because it's not as cool or it's not on trend, et cetera. So I myself, like as I started going throughout this journey, I've started to really prioritize classic pieces that are going to last me a long time. They might not be like the most exciting looking things, I guess, if we're thinking about like something that's like super trendy. But I've also found that like you can kind of mix and match and, you know, get creative. And maybe you have like a pair of trendy earrings, which hopefully would take up a little bit less, you know, room in a landfill if you had to chuck them out. So anyway, that's a little bit long-winded, but I do think that, you know, we should start to consider, you know, what we're purchasing from a fashion perspective. Is it going to last a long time? And then yes, the sizing piece I think is rough. And so I often now, when I go to purchase things, I look for stuff that's got a little bit of stretch to it. So it's not just like that standard, you know, cotton with like zero give. I look to either buy stuff that's maybe slightly oversized that I can kind of like flex into as, you know, weight fluctuates, et cetera. But I also look for stretchy fabric. And I have a daughter she's about 20 months old now and always been prioritizing the styles of clothing that have this like really great, you know, stretchiness to them so where I'm not like having to buy stuff for all the time.
Yeah. We can grow into them. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I was going to say clothing is a big one. And I think, you know, I always like to leave people like, you know, we can analyze everything out there and it takes forever. But I, you know, what I have uncovered, especially in the last year digging into this, is I think one of the biggest impacts everybody can do, because sometimes I talk to people, like, oh, I don't know what to do. There's two things people can do that will make the biggest impact. One, use reusable bottles. Stop using plastic water bottles. Just eliminate them from your life. And the hard part to do that is you need to treat water bottles like a pair of shoes. And so we do this at home now. When we leave the house, just like me telling my kids to put their shoes on, I'm always asking, where are their water bottles?
Yep.
And we've gotten far more hardcore about this lately, where if they don't bring it and we're at a place that says only hands out plastic water bottles, we say no. I mean, we could be eating Thai food and they go, it's hot. I said, no. And so like we have gotten that hardcore about it. And the other one is the grocery bags. So people just, and then the tip I always tell people is put it in the side of your door. Because how many times do you get in there and you forget it? Because it's
trunk.
Every time. Right?
Every time. Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's the discipline is those two things. If everybody did those two things, you'd remove 25% of the plastics in our oceans right there. Just by doing two very simple things everybody can do. And so that's at least my view on this is, you know, I am not a saint. I don't expect anyone to be, you know, we're not going back to trading pelts for gunpowder. Like we're not going back to that era. But what are some things that people can start to do? And those are good examples.
Yeah, I have another grocery bag hack for you. This is one that we did on, we posted on TikTok and it went viral. We found that if you bring one of those like plastic laundry bins, like the ones we're all kind of picturing in our head that kind of have like that lattice look, you could put one of those in the back of your trunk. And then instead of needing a bunch of grocery bags, you can just get everything put directly in your cart. You bring everything out and you just put it in one of those laundry things and just take it all into the house. Well, so that actually works pretty well.
Are you carrying your laundry bin into the store?
No. You just like forgo. You don't need bags. Like basically when they check you out, you just put everything back into the basket or the cart that you're using to shop for. And then you bring it all out to your car and you just throw it in there. So, I mean, that's maybe a little bit more complicated than just remembering to have your bags on the side, but it's not a terrible backup plan. They also have these like foldable, you know, laundry bins like that. So maybe those are things people can keep in. And totally agree with you on the water bottle situation as well. We do that a lot here at our house. And then the last tip I would give, and listeners, you've heard me talk about this one forever, but just it's single use plastic, specifically plastic wrap and plastic bags in your home for like school lunches or meal prep or anything like that. Like, I think we're all guilty of that, but ultimately, like if you do some of these simple swaps, like use the reusable sort of silicone plastic bags, you can also use things like bowl covers, et cetera, instead of single use plastic. I've been floored at how we used to go through at my family, would go through a few boxes of Ziploc bags and, you know, a roll of plastic wrap, I want to say every few months. And I'd be surprised if we do one a year, and probably not even one a year. I'd say probably every 2 years now, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think once you get on this path, if I think of where our family was a year ago versus now, you just start to audit everything in your life and rethink things. And, you know, paper towels is one. We have two little kids. Man, we go through paper towels.
Yes.
And now we use those, the reusable, you know, rags. Hang them up. They're great. There's nothing wrong with them. But
yeah,
we still use paper towels. But now I'd say we probably cut our consumption in half.
Yeah. Yeah. We sell a set of those on Brightly and I use them religiously. And actually, one thing that's like old school that I do with them, but it makes total sense, is like I use them as handkerchiefs. Oh, so that's always fun, right? You know, instead of having to, you know, bring along tissues, I just use those and I wash them, which is like maybe a little gross, but it certainly helps my nose when I'm having allergy attacks. It's not so irritated. Well, Nick, this has been fascinating to talk to you about all things stuff related. I love that your project, one of your projects is called Stuff TV, because it just, you know exactly what we're talking about just from the name. And I think, you know, before we wrap things up, you've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of different folks in the space, but also I would say like, you know, on the periphery of the space. So I'd be curious to know if you have like a story you'd like to share with our audience about a surprising insight you've discovered while doing some of these interviews.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll have to think of one because
there's
many things that I've heard. But, you know, one of the more interesting conversations I had was with a company. It was a guy named Mark Haremma, and he started this company called New Light Technologies.
Okay.
And what was fascinating about Mark and his company, one, he started this company like 12 years ago, or maybe almost 20 years ago. I forgot. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he had found out early on was that our oceans have microorganisms that essentially ingest greenhouse gases. And the byproduct they make is this, it almost looks like a little plastic pill. And as he was talking, he was showing me things like forks and sunglass frames that were made out of greenhouse gas. And I harp a lot on my podcast about plastics.
Yes.
And I felt like, you know, we've got two different types of plastics. We've got the ones that last forever. And then we have the terrible compostable bags that, you know, that there's got to be something that's kind of in the middle. And so that his company, again, New Light Technologies, I thought was one of the most innovative things of our time. And it's something that, you know, what these microorganisms are creating can be used as feedstock that just goes to, you know, you can take it to a plastic plant and basically you're making, you know, greenhouse gas, I'll say organic plastics. And so it's pretty dang cool because you can, you know, that's take one so of these cool. forks, you can use it and you can compost it.
That's so cool. I'm like going to Google after we were done talking. Of course, listeners, we'll put that in the show notes and we'll include links to that because that sounds fascinating. And you're right. I mean, I think the amount of people now that are innovating from a material science perspective is so cool. I wish that would have been more of a career path back when I was in school, because I feel like I totally would have just been like all over that, right? But you know, now I think as more and more people are starting to pay attention to the lens of sustainability times consumption, I'm super excited to see more of this happen, more people decide to start companies from that angle, and all of the above. So Nick, this has been amazing talking with you. Like we said, listeners, we'll make sure that you've got ways to connect with Nick and his new initiatives via our show notes. But before we go, I'd love to know really from where you're sitting right now, either as, you know, the founder of OfferUp or Nick who's embarking on Stuff TV, like what is exciting you the most about what you're witnessing in the, we can call it like the conscious consumerism movement right now?
I think there's multiple things that are happening at a macro level. I mean, one, you've never had more pressure in this space. And then maybe part of it is as consumers, we just have a lot more data. I think what we know now versus even 30 years ago, we've been monitoring our planet for a long time. We have satellites that are constantly giving us information. And we can use that to say, things are happening. I don't like it. And you can just look out the window. So even for people that say, I don't believe in global warming, I say, but then you're not looking out the window.
Yeah, that's true. So or you're breathing in the air that's, you know, unfortunately covered in smoke around you. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the best time of year in Seattle is usually August. And the last 6 years, we've had fires. We've never had that in my entire life like this. And so that's, again, part of the effects of just, of global change. And so, you know, I think that... that is good. I think the amount of capital going into this from a government level, also from on the private sector, from venture, you know, if you look at the last decade, the amount of money going into climate related businesses has grown 20x, right? So I think when you have that kind of capital going into an area, you get more of the brightest minds and they care about it. I think the younger generations definitely care a lot more about this. And I think that's good. Like they want to make an impact. And a number of the people I've been interviewing are much younger. And some of these, I interviewed a guy last week, who's launching, he just came out of college and he's going to launch a satellite on a SpaceX, rocket here soon, like right out of college.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting. So I think there's, you know, as a kid, we talked about climate, but it was more of a feeling with a little bit of data. Now we just have more data, more capital. I think more people are now educated and having better conversations and they can see it, right? I think you can see the effects of these things. And so, you know, overall, I'm optimistic. I do think part of the challenge is though, is we have to rethink everything.
Yes,
and that's just a big, big problem. But it's going to take everybody kind of talking and engaging in a conversation.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Nick. This has been awesome and really appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank. Member FDIC.